Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the September 22nd, 2012 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Hey, we invite you to stick around with us during the next hour as we discuss our nation's space program on this day in which more than 600 members of the local space community will gather tonight at the Apollo Saturn V Center to formally celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy Space Center. So big day here on the Space Coast with the air show going on, the gala tonight. Hope the weather holds out for everybody. I'll be heading up to the Space Center immediately following today's Space Talk to serve as MC for the program tonight. Certainly looking forward to, well, seeing some of NASA's finest representatives. They'll be on hand tonight to honor the half-century mark of what certainly has to be America's best spaceport. Current KSC Director Bob Cabana is going to be there, of course. Several past directors. I saw the list. It includes Dick Smith, Jay Honeycutt, Roy Bridges, Bill Parson. Several astronauts are going to be on hand, including some of my good friends Mike McCulley, Winston Scott. And I'm especially looking forward to talking with veteran Gemini and Apollo astronaut General Tom Stafford, who's going to be there. Plus, NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden also on hand. It promises to be a real fun night. By the way, tonight's program includes a new 12-minute video tribute to KSC based on the theme of celebrating the past and preparing for the future. And the formal program will be videotaped for later broadcast on NASA TV. So everyone out there will be able to see that video and share in the event. Of course, you'll have to provide your own drinks and finger food while watching at home. In the meantime, today, let's get started. You're welcome to join us on the program anytime during the next hour with your questions or comments about our space program. Give us a call, 321-768-1240, the number still. Or you can contact us online if you prefer by sending an email to spacetalking@aol.com. And we'll see it here on the screen and try to get your input into the program as well. Well, let's keep going here. Now, in honor of KSC's 50th anniversary gala tonight, the theme for this week's Orbital Inclinations. Before the Kennedy Space Center or even NASA officially existed, those early folks, a team of experts, managers, engineers, and technicians were making history on Florida's Space Coast. Those folks would go on to create KSC and call it home, laying the foundation for the launch teams and historic achievements to follow. Whether actually launched from KSC property or managed by the KSC launch team and sent aloft from nearby Cape Canaveral, here are, at least in my mind, 10 of the most significant achievements at the Kennedy Space Center during the past 50 years, presented in chronological order. Number one, 1958, the first U.S. satellite in orbit. Today's communications, weather, and navigation satellites that so significantly improve our daily lives, all that we have done in space since or plan to do in the future, none of it could be possible without first learning to get something into orbit. What's more, the launch team that would design and build the Kennedy Space Center to fly a Saturn V rocket to the moon and the space shuttle as well, well, they were in the blockhouse on January 31st, 1958 to send Explorer 1 into Earth orbit, our first satellite from this nation. They launched from Launch Complex 26 at what was then called the Cape Canaveral Missile Annex. Number two on the list, 1961, the first U.S. man in space. Of course, Americans took their first step into space on May 5th, 1961, with Alan Shepard flying atop a Mercury Redstone rocket on a 15-minute suborbital hop and cemented the need for the nation to build NASA's Launch Operations Center when 20 days later, President John F. Kennedy committed the U.S. to landing a man on the moon before the end of the decade. The Launch Operations Center going on to be called the Kennedy Space Center after the president's assassination. Number three on the list, in 1962, the first U.S. man in orbit. With his three revolutions of the Earth on February 20th, 1962, Mercury astronaut John Glenn won the hearts of the free world, put America solidly back in the space race with the Soviet Union, and apparently loved flying in orbit so much that he decided to do it again, 36 years later, this time launching from the Kennedy Space Center aboard the Space Shuttle Discovery in 1998. Number four, also in 1962, was the first commercial satellite launch. Can you believe it was that long ago? Today's emphasis on launching NASA payloads on commercial rockets, including the historic first flight in 2012 of SpaceX's Dragon capsule to the International Space Station, well, they can all trace its history to the first commercial payload launched on a NASA rocket. It was on July 10th, 1962, that a NASA Thor Delta rocket lofted AT&T's Telstar 1 communications satellite into orbit from the Cape. Number five on the list, 1969, first man on the moon. Humanity took its first steps in another world after departing Earth from a launch pad at the Kennedy Space Center and became a turning point in human history. Now plans are being laid so that when astronauts venture onto Mars, they will once again begin their epic voyage from the same Florida spaceport. Number six, 1972, first probe to explore the outer solar system. By the time Pioneer 10 was launched from the Cape toward Jupiter on March 3, 1972, other robotic spacecraft had been thrown past Mars and other places, but this was the first to be sent into true deep space beyond the asteroid belt. Many other probes followed, of course, lofted into space by unmanned rockets or the space shuttle, either to reconnoiter the planets directly or, like Hubble, explore the universe from orbits closer to the Earth. Number seven, 1974, the first U.S. space station in orbit. With brute force, a two-stage Saturn V lifted into orbit the nation's first space station, the Skylab Orbital Workshop, all in one piece. Problems with Skylab were overcome and taught us important lessons about living and working in space for longer periods of time. That experience served NASA well with the assembly and operation of the International Space Station, where even today we continue to learn things that will help us blaze a trail back to the moon for extended stays, then on to the asteroids, Mars, and even beyond. Number eight, in 1976, the first manned international mission. The Apollo-Soyuz test project, known as the Soyuz-Apollo test project in Russia, brought together two Cold War rivals in Earth orbit for the first time in July of 1976 and marked the final launch of Apollo hardware from the Kennedy Space Center. The relationships and friendships forged during that mission helped make possible today's expeditions to the International Space Station, where astronauts and cosmonauts representing many different nations work and live together in space. Number nine, 1981, the first launch of the reusable space shuttle. America entered a new era of space exploration with the launch from Kennedy Space Center on April 12, 1981, of John Young and Robert Crippen aboard Columbia, a winged spaceship capable of launching like a rocket, landing like an airplane, and returning to space time and again. For the next 30 years, through triumph and tragedy, the space shuttle program helped us explore our world, unlock the mysteries of our universe, and secure a permanent presence for humanity in space. Its legacy will continue in contributing to the design and operation of NASA's new heavy-lifting rocket, the Space Launch System. Number 10, first U.S. woman in orbit. From the launch pads of KSC, Sally Ride pioneered the final frontier not only for women, but for all those diverse faces of color, religion, nationality, and even sexual orientation that followed aboard on the space shuttle. Other firsts and historic achievements in space, too numerous to list, and some too technical to summarize, were the results of the miracle workers who reported for duty each day at Kennedy Space Center. There are more firsts to come. And that's Orbital Inclinations. We'll pause now. We'll return. Be joined by Elliot Pullum of the Space Foundation in Colorado. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. 321-768-1240 is the number to call. To participate in the program today, you can also send us your questions or comments in an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, as many of you know, I officially gave up journalism in 2004. I did it to go work for the Space Foundation, where I could spend more time constructively helping our space program instead of spending so much time looking for and writing about all the negative stuff, all the things that were wrong about our space program. My boss for the next couple of years was a fellow space cadet of the highest order, whom I continue to respect and admire even today. Elliot Pullum is the CEO of the Colorado-based Space Foundation. He joins us by phone from his home in Colorado Springs. Elliot, welcome back to Space Talk.
Aloha, Jim. Thanks for having me back. Good to hear your voice again.
Good to hear your voice, sir. Hey, you know, it has been a while since we've talked, and I just wanted to kind of ask you real personally, really quick, how is everybody doing out there on your team? We watched in just amazement these pictures of the fires in Colorado Springs and the folks that were so badly affected by that. It reminded me like a hurricane coming here. How's everyone doing out there now?
Well, you know, we're recovering and getting back to normal. The fire did actually come pretty close to Space Foundation headquarters, and we had about 10 members of the team whose families were evacuated. One of our team did lose their home.
Wow.
Everybody's pretty resilient, and everybody is bouncing back to the best of their abilities, and we're just moving onward with all the things that that we're trying to do at the foundation.
Well, and let's talk about that. Give us a plug for the foundation. Those folks that have never heard about it or don't know about you sitting out there in Colorado, tell us about the Space Foundation.
Well, I'm lucky enough to sit in Colorado, and they have our headquarters here, although, of course, we do have an office in Washington, D.C., and a few people stationed elsewhere, and we do get around an awful lot. We're really in the middle of some exciting things here at the headquarters. As you know, Jim, Colorado Springs is probably the most important space city in the world to not have a space museum of any kind. And we've been working on a plan for this for the last several years. We've moved into a really, really delightful, deluxe, and very large new corporate headquarters right in the middle of town, and next month we will be opening up the first phase of our Space Visitors Center at Space Foundation headquarters. We began doing some soft opening activities this past week. Great day for the foundation. We had our first parade of big yellow school buses pulling up outside.
Oh, wow.
And bringing the kids in and putting them through some discovery programs at the Northrop Grumman Science Center, where we've got the world's largest science on a sphere installation going. And so just a lot of great mission-oriented stuff going on here.
Yeah, that's incredible. You know, people don't, again, people around here, and I think people in general who are exposed to the space program are always surprised to learn how important and how big of a deal the space program is in Colorado. Not, you know, with no NASA center there, but a strong military presence and a strong industrial presence in terms of the commercial space folks. Talk about how Colorado kind of ranks in the scheme of things.
Well, you know, Colorado is the second largest space economy now behind California. And, you know, a lot of that is owing to a long tradition of military space activities here. In fact, just last week we hosted events celebrating the 30th anniversary of the establishment of Air Force Space Command. You know, a lot of people don't think about space the way we do. We try to view it very holistically and look at all the sectors and commercial and entrepreneurial and all the rest of it. And if you look at the big picture, you quickly come to realize that the largest space agency in the world is not NASA, and it's not Roscosmos. The largest space agency in the world is Air Force Space Command,
Yeah. And
it is headquartered right here in Colorado Springs. So it's a pretty big deal for us.
Yeah, and sometimes folks want to pigeonhole space organizations into the pro-NASA group or the military group or the planetary group or, you know, all the different groups that are out there. Your holistic approach was always something really neat that I love being a part of the Space Foundation. That you have that big picture, and of course certainly symbolized by the fact that you put on the National Space Symposium every year out there. Tremendously huge operation that involves everybody. But you're more than just an event planner. You're more than just a, you know, an organization that gets folks together. You're very involved in shaping policy and getting the word out. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, sure. You know, we're kind of a hybrid organization. I kind of describe us, just as you were saying, you know, typically people tend to put organizations into pigeonholes. You know, they're a NASA organization, they're an Air Force organization. We also have a variety of activities that we do that we blend holistically into our organization that you might think of as being standalone type enterprises. We do have a think tank that's based in our Washington, D.C. office,
yeah.
And we publish a space report every year. We do a lot of different analyses and independent research and policy-based research. We've got a very exciting project coming up here in the next couple of months I'll talk to you about. But then we've got our entire education enterprise. We have a facility, which is the Space Foundation Discovery Institute, where we have unique learning laboratories that are really unique anywhere in the world and where students and teachers come to us on a year-round basis. And so we have that enterprise. We have our policy group that works in Washington. We're also very active internationally. We are part of the U.S. delegation to the United Nations for space issues. That's something we've done for about a decade now, and it's NASA, the State Department, and the Space Foundation that represent the U.S. On these issues in the United Nations. So we've got policy work going on. We've got a lot of education work going on. We're doing this new visitors center. Got a lot of neat stuff happening at the visitors center. And then, of course, we still do meetings and events and put on the National Space Symposium and those types of things. So we're a busy group. And one of the things that I like about it is that all of the activities tend to be mutually supporting. You know, when do a research project in Washington and we uncover, you know, new trends and information, that information then informs our curriculum, which, you know, has an effect on our education programs. And so it's a great integrated way to approach things.
Yeah, and with about another minute here before our first break, Elliot, talk more about the Space Command and the importance of the military space program to everything that's going on and how that feeds into everything. You know, we look at the X-37, for example, landing out of Vandenberg, flying a couple times, about to launch here again from the Cape yet this year. You know, that's got to have applications for folks in the future on the non-military side. They're working a lot of stuff.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I was at University of Texas, El Paso a couple of weeks ago and attending a lecture, and one of the students was asking the fellow giving the lecture about dual-use technology. And you know, the first thing that leapt to my mind was, you know, is this kid carrying a cell phone? Does he know that his cell phone works on an accelerometer that was developed for an Army missile space program? Does he realize that GPS chipset uses an Air Force network of satellites and then all that technology was developed by the Air Force? I mean, people just don't realize how absolutely ubiquitous the technology is and how much of it does come from the military side of the house.
Yeah, and another GPS satellite about to launch here from the Cape. We'll talk about that in a little while. But the military also so important in terms of the national security. We talk about space, the reasons for space. We talk about the commercial applications. We talk about how it affects our lives every day. But the space program is not only just about the survival of the species, which I guess is national security. But it's so important to the warfighter on the ground, and I know folks that have who are in the military who just can't get along without their GPS, without that direct weather and the direct communications. Those are all applications. I don't know if you can expand any more on that, but again, help us emphasize the importance of the military space.
Well, you know, it's interesting because so much of the technology that ends up in our hands is coming from that kind of an application. And you know, the basis of GPS, you know, it's not just position, it's positioning, it's navigation, it's timing. If you look at all of the networks, all the cellular phone networks, you know, all your banking networks and branches, anything that needs that, either a precise time locator or whatever it may be, it's all dependent on the Air Force to keep that up and running for you 24/7, and they do a brilliant, beautiful job of it.
Before we get into the break here, and I looked at the clock wrong, we have another minute. I want to go back about the Space Foundation. We're going to talk about some of the travels you've done lately, but I want to go back to the Space Foundation because it's very much a corporate-to-corporate kind of thing and an industry thing and at a high level. And I guess what I'm trying to ask, Elliot, is that it's not an organization like the National Space Society that an individual can necessarily spend $25 on and join and get a newsletter.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not quite that kind of a construct, although anybody that wants to support us certainly can do that. You just go to our website, spacefoundation.org, and click the donate button. I mean, we're always looking for money to provide scholarships for kids. We're looking for money to provide materials for teachers. You know, we've got, you know, renovation work that we're doing on this visitor center. I mean, there's so many ways for people to get involved with us. And you can, you know, you can sign up for our daily news flash. You don't have to be a member. It doesn't cost you anything. We're not an individual membership kind of an organization per se, but we do have a lot of people who are engaged with us. You know, so much of what we do, we could not do without our many, many volunteers. You know, we've getting ready to open this visitor center. We've just been through the process of training docents and training volunteer reception people and so forth. And that kind of person-to-person contact, you know, even though we're not an individual membership society, that kind of support is really important to us.
Yeah, can't do anything without volunteers and the help, and that's for sure. Elliot, stand by for a minute. We're going to pause for our five-minute built-in hold here at the bottom of the hour, get you all caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports, especially, again, on this college football Saturday. We'll be back with more talk about the space program with Elliot Pullum of the Space Foundation. In the meantime, I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Banky.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. Our phone lines and online inbox open for your questions or comments. The phone number 321-768-1240. The email address is spacetalking@AOL.com, where, by the way, Walt in Rockledge has a couple of questions for my guest today. Elliot Pullum is the CEO of the Space Foundation based in Colorado Springs, where he's talking to us at home. By what, Elliot, taking a break from your hard work outside in the lawn, I understand, huh?
Yeah, we part of our excitement when we were evacuated from the fires was we moved into a small home in the middle of town that we had bought for our golden years. It's a smaller and single level, and once we got here, we said, well, why should we move back? Let's just stay here. So, a lot of renovations that we're working on.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's high noon there pretty much. It's a little bit after anyway, so maybe it's a little hotter there than it is here. But in any case, a question from Walton Rockledge, a couple of them actually, Elliot. The first one, space obviously not a major issue in this year's elections. What can pro-space voters do to make the issue more visible? And you get that question on the heels of the deaths of Sally Ride and Neil Armstrong and Endeavor flying across country and thrilling thousands again in California along the way. What can we do to make this program more visible? What should we be doing?
Well, I think there's a couple of problems. You know, there's some really fundamental structural problems with NASA, and I assume since we're talking politics and the space program, we're really talking about NASA. And so we've got some real structural work to do. The NASA has gone from, you know, 50 years ago where it had a clear purpose and a great sense of urgency and basically could get whatever it needed to get the job done to a position there today where most of the politicians that are elected at the federal level treat it as a jobs program, and that's just not a way to do pioneering and exploring. I think, you know, as with anything that's going on in government, we all need to hold our elected officials a little bit more accountable. And, you know, we certainly, you know, I have the benefit of having that as part of my daily responsibility, but I think everybody who cares should be, you know, communicating with your elected officials and letting them know it's not just a jobs program. It's much more important to the country than that. You know, I think part of the problem is that these people pay attention to their inbox and whatever is ugliest and thrashing its teeth most furiously in their inbox, and that's it's seldom space. It's usually a pork barrel issue or an issue that is more emotional for people. Although it's hard to imagine, you know, when you do attend a service for Neil Armstrong or you know, write your memoirs of Sally Ride, it's hard to imagine a more emotional topic when you really get into it. And I think we do need to get some of that excitement back into the discussion.
Well, as a follow-up then on the politics, and Walt's other question deals basically is his question. How would you rectify the apparent lack of support among many Republicans in the House for the commercial crew initiative? Some would say moving the routine lower transport function to private industry would seem to be in line with the Republicans' pro-business mindset. As you see both sides of the House and the fence, what's your comment on that?
Well, I think this is where the space program, like so much else in our country today, really gets trapped in the mudslinging nature of our two-party system, where everyone seems to have gravitated to a position of how ugly can we be towards the other person, as opposed to what can we do together to benefit the country. NASA, you know, has enjoyed bipartisan support over the years, but part of the difficulty, and really kind of the core here, is that NASA has over the years become unfocused. It's had so much put in its job jar, and if you look at the Space Act and how that was established, there's way more that people want NASA to do than they have money to do. And there is such a political turmoil to the way NASA is managed strategically. It's not really managed strategically. It's managed election to election. And so every time there's a new administrator or a new White House or a new majority in Congress or a change in the cognizant committees, people want to tinker with NASA and change its focus or give it a new mission to do, and it's almost impossible to succeed on that basis. So there's some real fundamental issues that have to be addressed, and that's really the heart of the research effort that I alluded to earlier. We've spent the last, since December, we've had our research team really researching all the things that have happened to NASA over the years, all the enabling legislation, all the changes in direction, how much money has been left at the table every time a program gets canceled. We will be putting out a report in November after the election, because it's not a political statement. It's a statement of national need and what's best for the country. And we will identify those issues and make some recommendations for how we can make NASA a more focused, purposeful organization that is not so subject to being blown away around by political winds, but that has a stability and a predictability to it so that things can get accomplished.
Well, and that sounds strangely and ironically or coincidentally like the legislation that was introduced by some Republicans this week, including our own Congressman Bill Posey, to do such things as make the NASA administrator a 10-year appointment, try to take the politics out of NASA, have a board of directors run the thing more in line with, say, the National Science Foundation. I don't want you to sneak peek what you're about to release here, but were you surprised by that, or maybe were you working with them on that?
Well, we've been working very closely with everybody on the Hill who is concerned with space matters, and in this case, yes, our folks in Washington have been working very closely with the folks that put that legislation together. The recommendations in that proposed legislation, there is a lot to like about it. There's a lot that's in consonance with the types of things that we're going to be recommending. Having a stable leadership, having a leadership that is, more than election to election, having leadership that is not so dependent upon political appointees, political processes, and having a focus to the agency that survives election to election and is able to really look for the long term and manage for the long term. These are all things that are really important to establishing a clear path for NASA that gives them the tools that they need to succeed. I mean, I'm really tired of people beating up on NASA all the time for not doing this or not doing that. Yes, there are some people at NASA that need to go. Yes, there are always problems in a bureaucracy, but that agency does more with less and has to sort out more conflicting priorities than any agency I know, and they deserve better than that from us.
Yeah, a lot of people want to point the finger at the NASA administrator, whoever it is, in this case now Charlie Bolden. And Charlie, in my opinion, is doing a great job and being a good soldier and following the marching orders that's being given to him by his boss, the president.
Yeah, I mean, Charlie's doing the best he can in a tough situation. I think where you and I might differ a little bit on this is I don't think Charlie's getting a lot of his advice direct from the president. I think NASA is de facto reporting to the Office of Science and Technology Policy, which is not only not reporting to the president, it's not reporting to the vice president, it's reporting to a department of the White House, and I think that's part of the problem. And I think that having a strategic guidance plan, a strategic leadership plan that prevents this kind of thing could be very important.
And that's interesting to me, Elliot, and you, in a way you taught me something just now, because I look at the White House as that all-encompassing umbrella, but you're right, when you get down to the individual, really where that line in the organizational chart goes, it does make a big difference as to where those marching orders are coming from. I also feel stupid now because in all the things you were just talking about, I forwarded you that news release from Posey thinking like, well, he ought to be aware of this, right? And it's like, man, Elliot, he's always on top of it. I shouldn't have even supposed otherwise. So anyway.
I don't know about that.
All right. Well, hey, one of the things I want to talk to you about in the remaining time that we have together, and this was really the most fascinating thing to me, one of the things on my bucket list is to visit Peenemunde, to visit the site where the V-2 rocket, the missile, was developed, where Von Braun really got his thing going. And you went there this year. I'm going to guess now, realizing it's the 100th anniversary of his birth, that was all related. Can you tell us about your visit to Germany and Peenemunde? What did you see, and what did you come away with after experiencing that site?
Well, it's interesting because the stimulus for the visit really gets back to the question of NASA direction. Our friends and allies who have smaller budgets, smaller agencies, look to us for leadership. And I think there's an increasing frustration overseas that people don't seem to understand what NASA is doing, and they'd love to follow if we would lead. And so I think, you know, back to the can we please get NASA focused question. But the visit was put together by DLR, the German Space Agency, and they invited about a half a dozen space leaders from the United States to come. And we did a number of things. We visited with industry. We also went to some of their active sites where they're doing space work. I think we tend to think that we're the bucket of all knowledge and ignore what other people are doing at our own peril. One of the places we went to is the DLR facility in Lampoldshausen, which is down in the Stuttgart area, which is their propulsion research center, and they have an incredible campus full of engine test stands where they're doing all sorts of engine test work and developing green propellants and things, and it's just fascinating. We also got to tour some historic facilities in Berlin at Adlershof, which was the center of aviation back in the very beginning. And included in that visit was some incredible early wind tunnels that somehow survived the war and are still standing. And just fascinating to see how, you know, back at the very dawn of aviation, these people in Germany had figured out these complex wind tunnels and how to test things and get things up to speed in a controlled environment.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Fascinating stuff.
Elliot, stand by. We're going to take our final break of the day. When we come back, we're going to wrap up our conversations for the day and offer up our weekly look at the local launch forecast as well. I'm Jim Banky. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. This is Space Talk with Jim Banky.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk with your reminder that you can stay in touch with us online throughout the week. Your first stop, of course, WMMBAM.com, keywords Space Talk, where you can find an archive of past Space Talk shows and text versions of Orbital Inclinations. You also can follow us on Twitter at Space Talking. There's also a Space Talk page on Facebook where your questions and comments also are always welcome. Now let's take a look at the local launch forecast, see what's on the calendar coming up. We're now about 2 weeks away from the launch of a Delta IV by United Launch Alliance on a mission to deliver the newest GPS satellite into Earth orbit. Liftoff from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station is targeted for 8:10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Thursday, October 4th, the anniversary of the launch of Sputnik. Then 3 days later, at least according to plans announced by NASA this past week, on Sunday, October 7th at 8:34 p.m. Eastern Time, the next Falcon 9 launch is targeted to fly. The SpaceX mission will send another Dragon capsule to the International Space Station on what is to be the first official cargo delivery sortie to the orbiting outpost. And we'll certainly talk more about that as we get closer. For more information about this and all the various launches scheduled around the world, jump on the web to WMMBAM.com, keywords space talk, and look to the link to our local launch forecast. On the phone with us today, Elliot Pullum, the CEO of the Space Foundation in Colorado Springs. And Elliot, tonight, Kennedy Space Center officially celebrating its 50th anniversary with a big giant gala. I'll be sitting at a table with Charlie Bolden, Bob Cabana, Tom Stafford. It should be a fun night. Anything you want me to ask them?
No, you know, I think people ask them questions, hard questions all the time. And when you've got an excuse, you get together with those guys and have a good time. I think you ought to just enjoy.
I think we're just going to have a good time. We're talking about your recent trip to Germany and kind of in the mode of that we're celebrating KSC. In my book, anyway, the very earliest birth pangs of KSC comes from Peenemünde, Munda, from World War II. The German rocket team that did their thing there, and I don't want to get into the controversy about it, but I am interested in how they interpret that historically at the site. But in any case, I think a lot of what Peenemünde did has some legacy here at KSC. In any case, at Peenemünde, at the launch site, Elliot, what's left there? What's there to see? And how do they deal with their story and some of the controversy?
Well, you know, it's clearly very difficult for them, Jim, because, you know, on the one hand, it is true that if you look at what came out of Peenemünde in terms of the technology and the engineering, it's really responsible for the two largest space programs in the world, both the American space program and the Russian space program, trace their roots back to the scientists and engineers that developed the foundational technology there at Peenemünde.
Except for that our Germans were better than their Germans.
Well, apparently so, or we had better support to offer, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, but in any case.
It's very interesting when you go to Peenemünde. It is in, you know, the former East Germany, and you know, I mean, you can sense when you've left West Germany, even though the country's been united for quite some time, you quickly run out of autobahns. The architecture changes; it becomes very much more rural, and it is a different kind of feel than the rest of Germany. And then when you get to Peenemünde, it's you know, there is a struggle there because people do want to preserve as much as they can, although, interestingly, most of what was there was intentionally destroyed at the end of the war. They did leave the power plant, which is a huge coal-fired power plant, was one of the largest in the region, and they left that. And then over the years, people just started digging around and poking around in the forest and hauling stuff up off the ocean floor, and they were able to dredge up all these incredible parts and pieces and components of the rockets. And so you can go into the museum there, which is a very it would be considered crude by our standards. I mean, none of the types of things we would do in a museum environment to preserve, control the lighting, control the atmosphere, don't let any, you know, fresh, rainy air in. None of that is there. It's been done clearly on a shoestring, and I think they struggle between not wanting to look like they're trying to glorify the past and therefore not putting too much money into this thing, not doing too much promotion around it, and at the same time wanting to preserve what is there and at least preserve their part of the story, their very important part of the story. So it's a bittersweet, melancholy kind of place for a space nerd, space geek, you know, people like you and me. It's absolute must do on the bucket list to go see this place.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's very melancholy and heartbreaking to be there.
You know, and looking at your pictures that you posted, and I was happy to see, the place reminded me a lot of parts of our own Air Force Space Museum from about 30 years ago, 20 years ago. You know, very simple, very charming almost, in that, you know, people are just, you know, you can see that they're dedicated, you can see that they're interested in preserving it, but again, as you say, having to deal with the judgment of world history on what happened there, the good and the bad. So
yes, yeah.
Yes.
That's it.
So what was the, was there a formal delegation there? I mean, did they do a nice program for you? I mean, kind of.
Yeah, they did. They we had a 4-day 4 or 5 day program that started and ended in Berlin and went around the various places of the country. After Panamona, went to Rostock, which is a big university center that had a lot of connections to the early aerospace program, and so we saw we were taken on a number of pretty neat tours. Got to walk around engine stands, got to go inside satellite control facilities, got to visit with engineers and students and academics, and it was a good program. When we got to Panamunda, we had a sort of a VIP tour where they walked us around and explained everything to us and let us have some time with our cameras to go out and touch things and take pictures and whatnot. So it was a great visit.
That's great. Well, Elliot, believe it or not, that's starting to wrap us up for today. We appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being on the program. And again, congratulations on the new world headquarters and the visitor center. I'm very pleased to be a little part of that. I look forward to perhaps helping you more in the future.
We sure appreciate your help on that, Jim. It's always great to work with you, and what a delight to spend a little time on the radio with you.
Yeah, now get back to work and get out there and fix your house up, would you?
I will.
All right, thanks, Elliot. Take care now. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, there goes Elliot Pullum, a good friend, Space Foundation CEO in Colorado Springs. Believe it or not, that is it for now. We're on our way up to the Kennedy Space Center for the big gala tonight. We'll have an hors d'oeuvre for all of you. Space Talk is a production of Mila Solutions, brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. By the way, next week on Space Talk, we'll be going over some questions and answers that people have submitted through the weeks that we've never really gotten to. We're going to kind of clean up the mailbox, by the way. I forgot to mention that a little bit earlier. And lots more in store for you as the program continues throughout the holidays here. Anyway, so getting back to the credits, my thanks to Sean Williams for manning the op station for today's program. Again, please join us next Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for another hour of Space Talk live on the air. Stay tuned now as WMNB presents a weekend edition of the Glenn Beck program. I'm Jim Bankey, and we will talk to you again real soon.